You okay, Lorelei? This is all my fault. I did something really bad. I kept screwing up in my piano lesson last week. Mrs. Brophy kept yelling at me. Sharp. F sharp. F sharp. I couldn't take it anymore. So I called her a bad word. Just in my head, but God heard me. Now we're all being punished.
What did you call her?
Cunt.
Hey everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Wendy.
And I'm Daphne.
And I'm Penny.
And this is Yellow Jackets WTF. This is our eighth episode of our Yellow Jackets coverage.
This episode, we are covering Yellow Jackets Season 1, Episode 2, F Sharp.
All right, the first thing on our agenda is to talk about our fucked up moment of the week. This is a great addition. I love it.
Yeah, it's really hard to choose sometimes.
Yes. And it always there's always at least a few.
I feel like it fits this show, though.
It really does.
Because of everything that goes on that we've seen in the whole season. And again, I wanted to mention this. This is our recap of episode 2, and we are taking into consideration everything that happened in this season. So if you haven't watched Yellow Jackets, you should go back, watch the whole thing, and then come back to this.
Yes. Because
we will be bringing up things that we learned later in the series and how it makes us look at what happened early on.
Absolutely. Exactly. And I'm really liking the rewatch from that vision of knowing what happens in the whole season.
Me too.
Yeah, it really changes my perspective. Mm-hmm. And there's so many little details I can appreciate now.
Yep.
Definitely.
So, Daphne, you want to give us your fucked up moment of the week?
Okay, so my fucked up moment of the week is Misty destroying the emergency transmitter.
It's a great moment.
Yes.
It is. She is such a complicated character, and based on everything we saw from her this season, I continue to believe that Sammy Hanratty and Christina Ricci are just nailing it. And Misty, she's a little bit off the rails, or a lot off the rails. And in this instance, she's looking at herself being a hero and being looked at in a different way. Whereas at the beginning of the episode, we see that she is being bullied on the phone. At this point, everyone's talking about how great it is and how she's able to help them and she's saving them. She doesn't want that moment to end, so she destroys the emergency transmitter, which is their only real hope of getting rescued.
And it's probably the thing that has the biggest consequences.
Yeah.
Yes.
I hoped that over the course of the first season, I would understand better why she would do that. And I believe that it was a misplaced desire to continue being important to everyone. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, didn't she want to get rescued? I mean, they're all going to starve out there. It's just, it's an insane thing to do. And she's kind of insane.
I don't think she wants to get rescued.
No. I don't think she wants to go back to the life she was living before. And I also don't think that she really considered what life out there was going to be like. She just knew at that moment that they were all needing her help and she was important. And that's really all that mattered to her because she'd never really had that before. We never really got a look into Misty's home life other than Misty herself. I mean, I start to wonder, did she live in that house by herself and that's a reason why she's crazy?
I am dying to meet her parents. I really want to know who raised Misty.
I mean, her room looked well you know, she had a lot of nice materialistic things. She had a stereo. She had a telescope, lots of scientific things. Her room was pretty. Not that that means she has good parents, but it's a big contrast to, say, Laura Lee's room, which was very stark. There was almost nothing in it. It was very plain.
And we see Nat's room later in the show. And, you know, she lives in a trailer and her room is just functional.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I like the opportunities that we get to see into their home life, because in some cases, I think it drives who the kids are. And in other cases, like Misty, we're just kind of like, huh? Mm-hmm. Like, she's got this, all this stuff. What's really going on? So I'm looking forward to maybe in season two, they might show us a little more into why Misty is the way that she is.
Yeah, I hope so. I really
want to. She's fascinating.
She is fascinating. She really is.
I really wonder, does she regret destroying the black box? Like, does she regret it, like, by the time we get to the end of season one? And does she regret it in 2021? I would wonder about that. And does anyone find out that she did that?
Yeah, those are big questions.
Mm-hmm. They are. Showrunners, if you're listening, we want the answers. Please give them to us. In your very best way, you're doing such a fantastic job, but we'd really like to know a few little things here and there, in addition to what you're feeding us. So, Wendy, what is your fucked up moment of the week?
All right, mine is also dealing with Misty. Is Misty chopping off Ben's leg with an axe?
Ooh.
I don't think anybody expected that. I don't think it was what anybody else would have done.
No.
No, the other girls were, like, throwing up and falling on the ground. And Misty was like, I know what to do.
Yeah.
She just charged in.
Did you notice, and I didn't notice this the first time around, she took her glasses off when she did it.
No.
She did.
Didn't notice that.
And where did that axe come from?
It must have been on the plane.
Yeah, it had to have been on the plane.
Because it was a big, giant, scary axe.
Yeah.
It looked like the kind of axe you see in, like, big office buildings, like, next to the fire alarm. And it's, like, in a glass case.
Yeah. In case of fire, bright glass. Yes, I'd agree with that. I'm not sure I'd want someone chopping off my leg to save my life. If she took her glasses off, how is she supposed to see? I mean, she wore them and wears them all the time.
Well, and it would be pretty typical to put a tourniquet on and see how we did for a bit.
Yeah.
Although that leg was never coming back.
No.
It was squashed.
No. It was mush.
It was really disgusting.
But I think your typical would be, somebody's going to come and save us. Let's put a tourniquet on. Let's, you know, but no. Yeah.
No, not Misty. No. Not at all.
And that's definitely my. How about you, Penny?
Well, there were a lot of Misty moments to choose from. So I'm going to go with Misty cauterizing Coach's leg, because they're all sitting around that campfire and they're having this great moment where they're sharing secrets and they're laughing. And Misty gets this look on her face like, this is what I've always wanted, to be part of a group of friends that are having fun. And then she just, like, quietly, without talking to anyone about it, like, heats up the axe and walks over. And she says to Coach, like, yeah, I cut off your leg and now I need to stop the bleeding. And, like, all the other girls hear him scream. It was just, if it were me, even if I had thought I need to cauterize his leg, I would have said to somebody, like, I think I need to cauterize his leg. So I'm going to heat, like, I would have talked it through and explained what I was doing. But she just was like, okay. And she just charged in the same way she did when she cut it off. She didn't discuss it with anyone. It was amazing.
It had a real Annie Wilkes feel to it.
Yes.
Yeah, it did. And when she, after she chopped the leg and all the blood was all over her face, and then I do remember she, like, puts her glasses back on, she sort of looks around at everyone, and I couldn't stop thinking about Rick Grimes being like, what?
What?
And I was like, Misty would do really well in the zombie apocalypse.
She would. Yeah. I'd want her on my team. She'd take care of business. Yep. You wouldn't have to worry with her around.
Unless you get on her bad side.
Yeah, no. You don't want to. Definitely do not want to. One of my points, and I might as well bring it up now because I feel like we're on a Misty kick.
Yeah, let's move into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you guys think? Do you think Stan was going to the basement of Hora? Her little date that she brought home? Do you think he was going down there?
I don't. I think she's still looking for love.
I don't know. He lied to her. Or he didn't lie to her. He's telling her that he needs to go at 6 a.m. Like, he has to get up at 6 a.m. And, you know, so he needs to get home to get to bed. And she's like, but you got fired last week.
Yeah. Yeah, he wanted out of that date. But he kept going along with it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He was a bad date. I mean, I've been on some bad dates. But, like, she was trying so hard to be cute and to, you know, engage him in conversation. And he was like, he deserved to go to the basement.
He liked hair was the only thing he could think of that he liked.
Yeah.
Hair.
Weirdo. Yeah, he goes, the usual stuff.
I liked her, what she was saying, like escalators and knuckles and clams and like all these strange things. It's just like, oh, Misty being Misty. This is who she is.
Yeah, escalators is a weird turn on.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what they were, you know, talking about because, you know, they weren't just talking about, well, what are you into? It was what turns you on, like what, you know, gets
and that
you excited.
Was Misty. That was.
And that was, yeah.
That was Misty trying to engage him.
Yeah. I wonder if Caligula was the deciding vote on whether or not he went to the basement. If Caligula came after him. Because animals are a good judge of character. They really are.
Yeah, but Caligula lives with Misty. He probably has a really weird yardstick.
He probably does. I think you're right.
I thought it was interesting that when she comes home and Nat is there with a gun, like, Misty doesn't even turn around and look at Stan. She's so happy and excited that Natalie is there.
It's true.
And she doesn't, and like, Stan is like, okay, I'm out of here, which I totally don't blame him. And she doesn't care at all. She doesn't even look at his way. She just keeps eye contact with Natalie the whole time and was like, hey, Nat.
Yeah, she's so excited to have her, like, cool friend back.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, it made me go to that place of the basement of horror just because of what we saw with her with Jessica throughout the season. And so I wanted to ask you guys that to start us off. So I think, that was my first thing. I just was curious what you guys were thinking about that.
Yes, the Misty and Stan's date was one of my points. And we might as well talk about it now. I was very entertained by her choice of escalators, muscular calves, knuckles, and steamed clams, obviously. Yes.
Obviously.
As turn-ons. She had very poorly applied, like, Lee press-on nails that you could see weren't fully stuck on, which I thought was really funny. And she's, like, doing that thing where she's, like, running her finger around the glass like she's trying to be seductive. But, like, I just kept seeing, like waiting for one of the press-on nails to fall off into her glass of wine. I mean, I have been on a date where the guy was just, like, not giving me anything. And I was like, do you like movies? How about books? Have you been on any trips that you like? And they're like,
And could you be even more excited? Yeah.
Yeah. I really identified with her in that moment. But like, also it's his own fault. If he just got fired, like, don't go on a date.
No.
Like, you're not in a good place.
He technically didn't get fired. It was
there were interdepartmental redundancies.
Yes. Yes. Mergers and acquisitions and
Yeah, he got fired. Laid off. It's the same.
Yeah.
She has, she's back to normal nails at the end of the episode. So those were definitely press-ons.
I also have Misty point. I just thought when they do that flashback to 1992, which would have been, she would have been like probably in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And the phone rings and you can just see this look on her face. She's excited. Somebody's calling her. And I just thought that little scene with the mean girls bullying her and being so ignorant and mean to her was so sad.
Yeah, but very realistic.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I think she's really had to steel herself to survive probably the bullying and the persona that she's had for all these years. And I just kind of wondered what came first. Did Misty become so twisted because she was bullied, or was she bullied because she was so different? Probably somewhere in the middle. And I think in general, people, you know, youth and teenagers who quote Plato, probably the world is not kind to.
Yeah.
And the quote she uses is, opinion is the wilderness between knowledge and ignorance, which of course, you know, it kind of flashes back to me. I remember my youngest was pretty cerebral and really super smart and like was not your typical girl, especially like in the later years of elementary school and the early years of middle school. And I just remember sitting at a Girl Scout function and one of her friends turned to her and said, "You're so weird, Lainey." Mm. And I just wanted to smack that kid right in the face. I didn't, but, you know, and just kids can be so mean.
They can. And if we were all the same, what kind of world would this be?
Right.
I know. Think about how boring.
Yeah.
But there still is that pressure on kids. And I don't know because I'm 50-something, but it feels like it's getting better, that it's a more accepting place for people that are different. But again, I'm not living that life, so I don't know.
I think it depends, because you still hear these horrible stories about kids who like commit suicide because people at school are teasing them about being effeminate or trans, yeah, or, you know, weird.
And social media has probably made all of that much worse. Yeah.
So cyberbullying is so strong now. I mean, it used to be that kids had to wait until, you know, the bell rang and then bully you in the hallway or on the school bus. But now they can get to you like all day, every day.
Yeah. Yes. It's very sad to think that kids go through this and then feel like they have no choice. Like nothing is going to make it better unless they weren't there. And that's just terrible.
Heartbreaking, because you know that if they could just like leave that environment and go to a different one, they could have a good life.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me that we haven't really seen too many flashbacks for the girls of when they were real young.
Yeah.
But I'm glad they gave us that little snippet of Misty, because I think that's important to keep it grounded in our opinion of her, that, you know, she was a little kid who you know, had feelings and probably didn't have a very kind go of it.
Yeah, she just wanted friends. That's all mm-hmm. she wants.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is her chance out in the woods. She belongs. She's part of the group.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's keeping them alive.
I talked about this last time. When she's in her room and the phone rings, the song Hold On by Wilson Phillips is playing. Mm-hmm. And then it plays again when she yanks that thing out of the flight recorder. And it stops right when she yanks it out, almost like the two moments are meant to be connected in our mind, and that the bullying, she feels like she finally got back on the bullies. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because she's important to the group. She's needed here. And the way or the place that they put that flashback, so you almost think that Misty, that's where her head went when she's in the plane and it's going to crash, is she's not thinking about loved ones, she's thinking about being bullied. And that is also really sad.
Yeah.
Right. Like maybe she's like, oh, finally my torment will end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's
sad.
That
is really sad.
It's just so sad.
I did think that, just like you said, Penny, all the other girls, when they get out of the plane, they're dazed, they're in shock, they're stunned, but not Misty. Misty's in action mode. And when the coach falls from the tree which was a horrifying splat, you know, and all the other girls look away and are just horrified. And Misty doesn't look away. She's staring right at it. She's fascinated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She maybe should have been like a coroner rather than a nurse.
Yeah. Because yeah. She doesn't mind the dead bodies.
Right.
I mean, yeah. She seems like in tune with it. And honestly, something you said about her springing to action, she was like an action hero. It was like, mm-hmm. push the door open, although she couldn't get it open by herself. It was, but get out of the plane.
She knew what to do.
She right. knew what to do. Like, she was the one. It's like she's been training for this her whole life by virtue of going to two babysitter classes.
I suspect she's been doing a little more than that. She's oh, been yeah, surfing the net or
yeah.
some other research. Yeah, like when yeah. Coach Scott was yelling for help, she's the only one who responded at first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
And like with the axe and everything, she just was like, we got to do it. We got to just like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has to happen.
No hesitation.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. Anything else about Misty?
Probably.
Well, we can move on. Daphne, what's your next point?
Okay, my next point, I want to talk about, this is a little bit creepy, but I feel like we have to go there because when this episode aired, I took screenshots and went back and actually looked at these pictures. Poor Sammy, the traumatized child, who is terrified of the lady in the tree, who I do believe is Thaisa. Maybe it's not, but I think it is. I think he is balancing between he loves his mother and this version of her, but knowing it's like he knows that his mother has got some problems and he's just trying to, you know, internalize it without having to say, Mommy, why do you get in the tree? Although some kids, I feel like that's what they would have done is said, Mommy, why are you outside in the tree? But he seems to know that something is off.
He probably tried to talk to her one time when she was in the tree and yeah. she was like, not his mother. And he was like, yeah. oh, all right. There's yes. two. There's two people.
Yeah. And so he wouldn't open his shades. And so Thaisa goes in and reads for him. And then she does open the shades. And what we see are these pictures that he has drawn to hang on his window. So I took screenshots of these, and while some are not completely visible, it's hard to tell what they are. There are some that are. One of them is three figures standing over a bed. I'm not sure if it's his bed or a bed. There are a couple of pictures that are just lots of different colored eyes, like he's drawn eyes. One is a black hole, what looks like a black hole or darkness. Then there is a black mask-like drawing with red eyes. There is a person naked tied to posts.
I didn't see that one. Creepy.
And a picture of two people and a heart in between. One has dark hair, one has red hair. And there's like these five masks around them. And then there's another one of two people with a post in between. And the final one that I was able to see is there's a picture of him with his mother, Simone, and then another person that looks like Thaisa, but it's got dark, dark eyes. It's kind of resembling some of the other figures in other pictures. How he would know? I mean, some of these pictures allude to what happened to Thaisa out in the woods. So how he would know that, I don't know. Other than it does come back to the no-eyed man that Thaisa always, like, seems to see. And we know that she's got some special gift, like, of seeing the dead, so.
Do you think it's possible that the cult, Lottie's cult, could have anything to do with that?
Potentially.
I mean, there is that episode where we see Thaisa in the tree and then she goes inside. And there's mm-hmm. like a branch that's still moving. I don't think she's alone out there. So maybe he saw like Lottie's people or who knows.
I mean, she looked terrified being out there. Like she, I don't think she fully understands what's happening, but she kind of does, and it scares her. I think she's afraid when it happens, but then she's, you know, not sure how to deal with it. And the more that we see, I mean, we had this debate last week. We're not sure who put the altar in their house. Who knows?
In that secret hole room that you have to crawl to. Yeah.
Yeah, creepy. It's real creepy.
I just have a feeling that it's misdirection. They want you to think it's Ty doing all these things, and I don't think it is, but I could be wrong.
I think something's definitely up with her because of the smirk after she won the election. The smirk on her face, I just feel like it looked devilish. Like, it didn't look like, oh, I did it smirk. It was more of a, you know, I did it. Yeah.
Well, I thought that might be her other personality showing itself in that moment. Like,
I wondered about that too.
Aoife has two personalities, at least two.
Well, yeah. And you're in the middle of potentially having this huge, terrible secret get bust wide open. You're also in the middle of, you know, helping to dispose of a body.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in the middle of your family being broken up. Why wouldn't you step down from that election and just say no? Why would you open yourself up to further scrutiny and further?
Well, and Shauna told her when they were sitting at the restaurant, we decided as a group, we were not going to be in the public eye. We were going to, because it was never going to completely go away, but at least if they didn't get in the public eye, it wasn't going to come up. And the other people were not going to come out of the woodwork.
Right.
Yeah. Because there are others out there. We just don't know who it is.
Right.
I mean, Ty has shown herself to have huge drive and ambition. And it's also her flaw, right? It's her greatest strength and it's her biggest flaw. And her ambition took over and pushed her past what was sane. And she ran for office anyway. And I think the stress of running for office is what led her to being, you know, off her rocker.
Maybe the stress manifests itself. And that's what gets her other personality or this other side of herself to come out.
Yeah.
And she's not considering that until maybe she was outside in the dirt. And now she realizes, oh, boy, you know, my dark passenger, to quote Dexter, is here.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. I feel like mostly what I have is like 20 different notes from here on out, but
I think that's okay.
I will talk about Natalie and Travis. We don't see a ton of them together in this episode, but it really struck me. This is kind of the beginnings of their relationship. It seems like they barely knew each other before. And Travis is really being his typical sullen, angry self here. Even to Javi, he's really awful. His little brother just went through losing his dad, and he's not there for Javi at all. But you can see some inklings of a bond between them, and they share a few moments. And I think when we see Natalie in 2021 and she's drinking in her hotel room and then she calls Travis, and I believe it sounded very much like the same actor, just maybe auto-tuned his voice to sound deeper, but it sounded like the same actor.
I thought so too.
You could tell it was Travis, and he wouldn't take her call. He told her that she had the wrong number, and it's just so heartbreaking and tragic knowing what we know now.
Yes.
And I just worry so much for Natalie because it just seems like she doesn't have anything left. And she's just such a tragic figure, even more so now because we know what the next 10 episodes have in store for her.
Yeah.
And it so even just their little scenes together were just so even though Travis was being a dick. They were just so special. And I really liked them together. Aww,
me too. Yeah. They had that bonding moment too after everything went down. And she shared her alcohol with him. Mm-hmm. Because she knew he needed something because this was a lot to deal with. He's one of the few men that are out there. And he's troubled himself. We've talked about this before. There's something about Travis we haven't learned yet.
Right.
Yeah. I think his family is definitely dysfunctional.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I question why they were even on this. Like, why he was even...
He obviously didn't want to go.
No. And so I'm not sure.
And he lost his dad. I mean, and in this horrifyingly graphic, you know, traumatic way.
Yeah. And he climbed the tree. He didn't hesitate to climb the tree to see if there was any chance that his dad was alive. And he had said that, you know, he was trying to put a mask on someone and the door blew open and he flew, you know, blew out.
He was trying to help people. And as much as Travis is really stone-faced and not giving up a lot of emotion, when he realizes that it's his dad up there, he, like, yells and immediately runs to him. And I think that's kind of the real Travis.
That's also very typical teenage boy, right? Mm-hmm. To pretend that you don't feel anything until it's too much and then you have to show it.
Yeah. Yeah. Keeping it a secret, holding it in, stone face. You know, it's a poker face. It's what kids do. I think kids do it more than you would think because the world is a scary place and things happen and kids have to internalize and hold things back so much more. I feel like it's more now than they ever did because it just, the world, the way that it is just, it's a scary place.
All right, Penny, your next point?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Shauna and Jeff's marriage. You know, knowing what we know now, I find Jeff really charming, whereas the first time through the show, I was like, he's like actively dull. Why? Why would she marry him? And now I'm like, he really loves her. And I thought that their attempts at, you know, role playing were pretty hilarious. It was a nice moment of lightness, even though it was bad for their marriage in the moment when they just, he was like, are you making fun of me? And she's like, I don't know how to pretend to buy an armoire. And like, you know, they're just trying something. She's like, puts on a weird British accent for no reason. And it was a very silly scene. And then, you know, she makes it up later when he's clearly stressed out about whatever numbers he's looking at on his computer. And she's like, I need to buy a new bed. And they, you know, and she takes charge. There's this really great moment where he reaches for her and she like shoves his arms down and pushes him back. And he says, damn, Shauna. I think she likes taking charge because in episode one, when we see them having sex when they're teenagers, she's totally the boss in that situation as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, she is.
Yeah, I've really sort of come to appreciate Jeff. And I hope they make it. Like, by the end of season one, I'm like, Jeff is the best. Like, don't hurt Jeff. We love Jeff.
I think, too, in watching this, I'm watching for hints of something now. Because we know what happens after. We know he's the one who was blackmailing. And this is, in this episode, we got to see. He freaked out when she talked about the fender bender and he wasn't looking at her. He was thinking in his head, how much is that going to cost us because we don't have any money?
And I think if you take out the fact that we now know that Jeff was not having an affair, you can see Jeff's so desperate for some connection with her and communication. You know, the sex therapist or the marriage counselor says, I think you guys should do some role playing. And immediately Jeff says, yeah, awesome.
He's all in.
And Shauna says, no. All at the same time. And you can see, like, he just wants connection with her. Mm-hmm. And I think that was all tainted with this haze that we all had for him because we thought he was cheating.
Mm-hmm.
And even after they have this connection where they actually have a really great moment at the end, then you can see he's getting a text message from his mistress, which that's what we all thought, which makes it all even worse. Then you're just hating him even more. And
yeah,
when you take all of that out, you can just see how desperate he was to fix things with her and to have it be good with her.
He loves her.
I mean, he does love her.
He's willing to go down for her for killing Adam.
Yeah, and with no hesitation.
Like, yeah.
He's like, I've got a plan.
With no hesitation. Yeah, he's willing to take it for her.
It also makes me sad because I thought, what a waste. Like, if they had only communicated with each other, a lot of things could have been avoided.
Poor Adam would still be alive.
Right.
Yes.
I don't believe Shauna would have done that.
Mm-mm.
I think she did that because she thought her marriage was over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think so, too.
Yeah. And she killed him because she killed Adam because she thought he was involved in this plot, basically.
She thought he was about to blow up her whole world.
Mm-hmm. And she couldn't have it.
She panicked.
Right.
And but she takes risks and she does things to protect herself. And this was a situation where she had to do what she had to do. And so
and
she
I
did.
And I suspect that will flash back to other situations.
Yes.
Where she had to do what she had to do.
Like kill a bunny.
Yeah. I have a feeling she killed more than a bunny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I think it's your turn, Daph.
All right, well, I have to go back to Misty, but this is also tied to Natalie.
I never get tired of talking about Misty.
I know. I got a closer look. I'm kind of digging into the little things in these episodes because I'm paying closer attention since we know what happens. It's making it, like I think we've talked about before, it's a lot of fun to go back and actually pay attention to the little things that we might have missed. So Misty's folder that Natalie is reviewing, there are a bunch of different items in there. We've got a news clipping that says survivors requesting privacy after harrowing ordeal. She's got Shauna and Jeff's wedding announcement, but the funny thing about that is the text underneath it has nothing to do with a wedding. It's talking about oil endeavors. I thought that was strange.
Is it like a email or something?
No, it was like a newspaper clipping.
A newspaper clipping?
Yeah. Okay. It seems a little strange. Because usually if they put a wedding picture in there, they'll put information underneath. So-and-so were married and la la la. Yeah, right. That's not what was there. She's got a copy of what looks like the marriage license for Shauna and Jeff and Callie's birth announcement. She's got Thais's campaign flyer, the business card for Jessica Roberts, a Where Are They Now article that looks like a People magazine or an Us magazine, and then she has the copy of Travis's driver's license. So she's been collecting a lot of, information on the people that survived. But I looked at that and there wasn't anything additional. Like, there's not any little thing that you could see that would say someone else, right. Who else made it out. But I was looking at it very closely.
When she pulled her files out, it was like a big file box. But she only gives that one folder to Nat. So we don't know what's in the box.
Yeah, we don't know what else is in there. But this starts Natalie on this road to trying to talk to Travis.
Yeah.
She wants to make sure he's okay. She's worried about him. Like, they have this connection, toxic or not. The two of them have a connection.
Right. They promised each other that they wouldn't kill themselves. And
yes,
it's like a touchstone for each of them, right? Like, still alive. Okay, good.
Yeah.
That scene in the hotel room where she calls Travis and he blows her off is really sad on so many levels.
Sad.
First of all, just being in a grubby motel room is sad. Like
drinking
whiskey
out of a bottle or whatever.
And she's like half dressed and the whole scene was really beautifully made and sad, sad, sad.
Mm-hmm. Knowing this was probably her last communication with him.
Yeah.
Yep.
That, it's just so sad.
And he wouldn't even acknowledge that it was him.
That it was him.
Awful.
And I mean, maybe that's not because he doesn't care about her. Maybe that's because he knew what he was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or not. We don't know. Not.
Yeah, I don't think he killed himself.
Or maybe it was because something was happening. We just don't know. But it's just so tragic. It's just so awful. Because you can see that they were really special to each other out there and that they went through a lot together and their bond meant a lot to her.
Mm-hmm. Which is why she was ready to end it at the end of the season, because she felt he had done what he said he wouldn't do.
Right.
And so she felt like there was nothing holding her to anything. You know, the agreement they made, there was nothing left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My next note is about Jackie. She's not in this episode very much, but I thought the little pieces all added up together. So the first thing we see is that she's very hell-bent on saving Shauna's life. Mm-hmm. She drags Shauna out of that plane, and that plane could have easily just blown up and burst into flames at any second, you know, mm-hmm. and I'm sure that's what anybody in there would have thought. But at the same time, she doesn't take time to try to save Van.
No.
And she drags Shauna away from saving Van. And then Shauna says, we have to go back in the plane, and she stops Shauna from going back in the plane. I could understand Van feeling a type of way about that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because that stood out to me, too, that Shauna is frantically trying to unfasten her. Jackie is not. She's just standing there. Like, she's standing behind her. She's not trying to do anything or trying to find something to cut her out. Like, nothing.
Right. Right. And Shauna, I think, was kind of drugged and in shock. And
to be fair, they both took Valium, so they were probably both pretty out of it.
Yes.
That is true.
And the other little snippet that I never noticed before was when they are looking for alcohol to disinfect Ben's leg, they pull out some sea breeze that belongs to Jackie. And her knee-jerk reaction to that is to say, hey, that's mine.
Yeah.
And she kind of catches herself. And so she says, hey, That's a great idea.
Yeah.
And I think this is just trying to show that Jackie, you know, I'm sure she would have given it up, but I think her first reaction is selfishness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they wanted to show with that little scene.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it was just a little stupid, I guess, toner or something. What was sea breeze? I don't even.
Sea breeze was something.
Yeah.
Astringent.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it was just a nothing. You just crashed in a plane.
Sea breeze was a popular astringent in the late 80s, early 90s.
Oh, I had some.
I sort of remember that. Yep.
It smelled like it was going to melt your face off, honestly.
Yeah. And if you had like a zit or anything and you put sea breeze on it, the sting was intense.
I think it was just about
So when they pour it on Coach's leg and he's like, ah, I don't blame him.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, gosh.
Right.
Yeah. It was terror on a pimple, let alone a leg that had been.
And the only other thing with Jackie I noticed is that I don't think we see her eat through the whole first season. They were eating around the fire at the end, and she wasn't.
Yeah.
No, she wants to save the corn nuts, which causes Van to get a little testy.
She says something about saving food, but she's not eating. And I don't think we hardly ever see her eat.
Yeah.
No, we don't.
Makes you wonder. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she actively refuses food at the big homecoming Doomcoming dance, and at one point Shauna tries to make her eat, and she's like, what's the point, we're all gonna die out here. She might have an eating disorder,
maybe,
unclear.
All right, Penny,
I'm glad you brought up Jackie, because my next point was about toxic friendships. I wasn't on last week, and you guys were talking about Shauna and Jackie and their whole deal. And some people online were being really harsh on Shauna, like, well, if she didn't like Jackie bossing her around, like, why didn't she say something? And I had a toxic friendship in high school that was really difficult to get out of. Rather than me sleeping with this girl's boyfriend, she made a point of sleeping with every guy I ever expressed interest in. And she was constantly bossing me around, and I was really confused. I mean, when I was like 15, I didn't know how to deal with those dynamics. It was all new. And, you know, Shauna in this show is 17 or 18. She doesn't know how to gracefully exit. Her plan was to go to a different college and drift apart, which is a strategy I relied on. Now, the toxic girl I was friends with kept showing up in my life. She visited me at college. She showed up at my first apartment after college. She constantly finds me on social media, and I have to block her. She's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, in addition to being kind of a jerk. But I just have a lot of sympathy for Shauna, who didn't want to have a big, dramatic, like, Jackie, you know, you're always bossing me around, and I don't want you to do that anymore scene when they're trying to, like, win nationals or be friends. And they've probably been friends since they were, like, 6 years old. So, you know, like that thing about if you put a frog in hot water, it'll jump right out. But if you put it in cold water and then slowly heat the water, the frog will stay there till it dies. Like, Shauna was the frog in this toxic friendship for like 10 years. And then she was like, oh, I need to get out of here. And then the plane crash happened. It's not like, I don't know, 17 and 18 year olds don't have the social skills to adroitly remove themselves from a bad relationship.
And your friend group at that age is so entangled in your identity and in your other friends. Like, so if I just tell this person off, there's going to be consequences to that. And sometimes we're scared of those consequences. I absolutely understand that. Now, did she have to sleep with Jeff?
No.
Probably not. And if anything, that was going to make things more complicated and not less. But I think, you know, I don't think she's not the protagonist, but I don't think she's the antagonist either.
Yeah.
She's somewhere in the middle. Most of the girls are. Most of the characters are in this show. And yeah, I totally get it. And people can have toxic friendships into their adults. And sometimes you just do things because it's a habit and because you don't want the confrontation or
the drama. I mean, she really, yes. She had an exit plan. She was just going to go to Brown and let the friendship just drift away.
And then it probably would have. And if they hadn't have crashed in that plane crash, they probably would have drifted away and nobody would have found out about her and Jeff, or she would have gotten an abortion probably. And it would have just been like normal life.
And instead, now Shauna, you know, she's 40, whatever, and she's never grown out of being 18 years old. And she still doesn't know how to manage relationships because she's, like all of them a little bit, arrested in time to when the crash happened.
Yeah.
But I think if she had had a normal life, she would have learned how to deal with that kind of stuff.
Right.
She's so bored. Like, I feel like even when she's having the conversation with Callie about taking the meat out of the freezer, like, she's just annoyed at having to say, explain what it looks like. Because Callie is just asking these questions and she's just, like, over it. Like, why do I have to keep dealing? I feel like she's thinking in her head, why do I have to keep dealing with all these stupid people?
And I think also she thinks that Callie is being intentionally obtuse, the way that teenagers are sometimes when they're like, I don't want to take the meat out of the freezer. Why do I have to do that? And so she's being like, Mom, I don't even know what meat is. Leave me alone. And I'd be annoyed with her too.
I had absolute flashbacks to teenage girls. They're the worst.
My friend Anne was an English teacher. And she said to me at one point, she said, that age group, only their parents could love them. Because they were just so difficult to deal with. The hormones and everything going on, it's just crazy they do.
And even when they're older, it's like, and this is just so natural and probably the way it just is. Because it happens, I'm sure I was like that when I was 18. You think your parents know nothing.
Yes.
You think they haven't lived and that, you know, you just see them as your parents. You don't see them as regular human beings.
No, you don't.
Yeah. Until you get a little older and then you kind of figure things out.
Yeah. Callie knows her mother went through this experience. She knows at least the public version of the story. And she's so callous about it. She even wears that uniform to a party because she thinks it's like funny or something.
Yeah. That was awful.
I mean, she didn't know her mother was going to see her, but still. Really thoughtless.
Yeah.
There's so much about Shauna and Callie's relationship that we haven't hit the cusp of it. There's so much more to come that I feel like in the next couple episodes, we're really going to break into their dynamic. Because Shauna, there are moments of brilliance from her in the way that she deals with her daughter.
And I think Callie has seen a little bit of a different side to Shauna in the upcoming episodes.
Yes.
And I loved it.
Me too. I'm really excited to be able to talk about it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
All right. Where are we?
I think it's my turn. And I just have to bring up, it's a small point. And I just have to say, oh, Adam.
Aw.
You had nothing to do with anything and you paid the ultimate price.
And you know, so I'm 100% convinced. Although I think the showrunners have confirmed that, haven't they?
I'm not sure.
I'm not 100% convinced he didn't have anything to do. But he's so cute.
He is. She even says to him, Shauna says, are you trying to be adorable? Does that usually work for you? I mean, I feel like we got the spunkiness of Shauna in her discussion, you know, in her communications with Adam. I enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. It was like, okay, we're getting to see a little bit more than just the bored housewife.
Yeah. And at this point, we've only seen Jeff as being dull as dirt. So
yes.
I was sort of like, yeah, Shauna, hook up with Adam.
Yeah, he's fun. He looks like he's adorable.
I don't care about your stupid marriage. Hook up with Adam.
Hook up with him. It's going to be fun. Get back at Jeff.
Right.
Who cares if two wrongs don't make a right?
Yeah.
You know, go for it. Because he's obviously, I think, into her right from the start. I think he really is like, huh, well.
Yeah, I thought that was super suspicious at the beginning because he was into her like the second she hit his car.
Yes. And he is adorable.
Yeah,
he really is. I like the way, too, he writes the mechanic's phone number on her arm. Mm-hmm. Like, that is just, you just don't do that unless there's something there.
Yeah. That's flirty.
Mm-hmm.
And then he made her write hers on his arm.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that was kind of how Jeff realized something had happened because he saw the arm, the phone number. He kind of went off the deep end. After that, interrupted their first attempt at role playing.
I mean, I have to agree with Shauna that furniture shopping isn't particularly sexy in my mind, but
no,
you know, it's his life, it's his world.
She turned it on its head though when the time came.
Yeah,
she turned it on its head and she took control. And I get the impression he's not used to seeing that side of her personality where she's just kind of pushing him back on the table.
Or maybe like, he hasn't seen it in a long time, right? Like, that's probably the Shauna he married.
Yes. It's kind of the Shauna that he had sex with in his car.
Yeah, she was in charge. Kids. She was totally the boss in that situation. And he liked it.
And now they've just, you know, resigned themselves to marriage being a boring institution. Where you just muddle through life and it doesn't have to be that way.
I mean, in a way.
But that's kind of what's happened.
In a way, their story by the end of the season is like a beautiful story about how you can rejuvenate a marriage, right? Like once they started communicating, yeah. she found out how mm-hmm. much he really loves her. And it really opened her eyes to who he is as a person, that he's deeper than she thought he was. It's kind of wonderful.
And they're both facing really tough situations, but they're doing it together, mm-hmm. which is always brings you closer and makes you grateful for that person.
Yeah.
I have a note about Laura Lee.
Oh.
I know, I've been thinking about her a lot in the last two episodes rewatching this, and I thought that it was really sad and, I don't know, worrisome, I would say, that she thought God was punishing her because she had mean thoughts about her piano teacher, and that God crashed the plane and killed her teammates because of that. And I just kind of wondered, you know, where is that coming from?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because not to get religious, but I think typically that's not the God that most people are taught about. And it seems like based on some of the things that she said and her behavior and seeing her room, that she's kind of lived a very stark, strict life with this fear of doing the wrong thing and fear of God. And it makes me feel really bad for her.
I mean, if she had survived, I think that eventually her views on God would have become more mature and more nuanced, and she would have gotten past this. Again, she's very young. And, you know,
and she almost seems stunted.
Yeah. Like, I think she probably grew up in a very religious family and very strict. And she just mm-hmm. hasn't had a lot of exposure to outside ideas. She's probably one of those kids whose parents, like, got a special waiver so she didn't have to go to sex ed.
Yep.
And she was, while everyone else was worried about things like sea breeze and finding their alcohol and pills, which is important when Lottie finding her pills, she's more excited about her teddy bear.
Yeah.
Like that's what she's excited about. And I think you're right. I mean, maybe in many ways she's more of like a 13-year-old than
mm-hmm.
the age that she is.
Yeah.
She's been sheltered.
Yeah. It made me question her home life. And then I felt sad. So like all the girls laugh when she says her secret confession, which was a funny, light moment, but probably not for her.
Although I think when they start sharing their secrets, it probably meant a lot to her and made her mm-hmm. realize that hers wasn't actually that bad. I think ultimately that was a healing conversation.
Mm-hmm.
The one I didn't remember from before was Lottie stealing clothes from TJ Maxx.
From TJ Maxx.
Such a
She could buy the store, probably.
Rich girl, like, it's like Winona Ryder shoplifting, like,
yep.
it's very 90s yep. thing to do.
Yeah.
It's really amazing. And when she admitted it, Jackie was like, what? Like, because Jackie clearly knew Lottie was wealthy and was like, why would you even want TJ Maxx clothes to begin with?
That's well, at the interesting thing, too, when they're around the fire sharing, we get to Shauna in her turn, and it's Shauna telling her secret is interrupted by a screaming
Coach Scott.
Coach Ben, who is having his wound cauterized. Like, he's having to deal with a lot in a very short period of time.
Yeah.
So what was she going to say?
What was she going to say?
Yeah, I'm sure it wouldn't have been, I slept with Jeff.
No.
Maybe she would have made something up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like she would have said something. Yeah, I don't know.
It was a vulnerable moment for all of them. They had been through a lot that day. That was one day.
Yeah.
So who knows?
And they all needed that laugh. They needed it so badly.
Yeah, they dealt with a lot. They had been carrying, they carried the bodies onto the plane.
Yeah, there's that great moment
with the jacket's banner.
With the banner.
The banner. It's like, oh, man.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so sad.
Intense.
Anybody else have more notes?
I had a couple notes on the music. We already talked about Hold On, but at the beginning, we don't have our classic Yellow Jackets opening credits, but they cut to just, it says Yellow Jackets, and the song is Mother, Mother by the Veronicas, and the lyrics are, I'm hungry, I'm dirty, I'm losing my mind, which I was like, how did you find such a perfect
song. But they do. I feel like they do with this show.
Yeah.
They look for the song, and at first you might hear it and think, huh? And then you really listen to the lyrics and it clicks in your head and you're thinking, man, they're so smart to put this together.
Yeah. In the scene with Nat in the hotel room, it's a song called Glory Box by Portishead that I've heard in other places as well. In fact, recently on Snowpiercer, I saw it. It's a beautiful song. I didn't know it before, and I've now downloaded it so I can listen to it in my car.
If you have Spotify, there is a whole Yellow Jackets playlist on there.
Good. I'll look for that.
Yeah. There was another song from this episode that I loved, and I just can't remember it, but the music is just amazing in this show.
Yeah, it always is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's Paik and I, when we record Run For Your Lives, we always talk about movies and directors who make music their own character. And I feel like this is a show that does that really well.
Mm-hmm. Because and the scary noises,
which
is
good.
Music, but it's very different. It's like,
Yes.
It's like, it's really creepy and effective.
And also, chanting. Like, it's ethereal, and it's beautiful. Sometimes there's ticking and, like, insect noises, and then they'll be like, ooh. It's really, it's cool.
Yeah.
So I have a note that this is the first time we see the symbol on the tree.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's the tree near where they crash.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right, they haven't gone to the lake yet, and there's more symbols when we get to the lake.
Yeah. It makes me think like Bermuda Triangle-ish. Like, here's the symbol and this is where the area is. And the symbols all create this Bermuda Triangle type area that, oh, the plane flew over it. It's going to crash. Like, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. But with this show, you start to build things in your head and figure things out that may not be the actual truth to the matter, but I love being able to, like, theorize about what's going on. This is a true water cooler show.
Mm-hmm. The plane crash scene I thought was really well done. I think they spent a lot of money on it. Lots of great effects. Put us really, like, you felt like you were in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Reminded me sort of the plane crash scene in Lost.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I have this fear of private planes because many years ago I found out that they're not subject to like most of the safety regulations that commercial airlines are subject to. And so I've always sort of felt like if you're in a private plane, you're sort of asking for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what making this a private plane does for the show other than the fact that it makes it so that only the team is on the plane and not any miscellaneous extra people. But, you know, Lottie's dad owns the plane or chartered the plane. Maybe there's something there that we'll find out about once we see a grown-up Lottie in the present.
I will say private plane crash rates are much higher than commercial jets.
Yeah.
Penny, I've wondered that as well. If it was Lottie's father's way of getting rid of the daughter with the strange ability to see what's coming.
That is so like, dark. Like that he would crash an entire soccer team.
I know. But we don't know. And her father just doesn't seem like a likable person.
Yeah, he is a jerk.
He just doesn't. And we'll get to that. Like we haven't got there yet, but that's coming.
Yeah.
That episode is coming. But we do, as we cover this show and look back at the early episodes and keeping those other things in mind, it does make you wonder.
Just curious about it.
All right. Let's take a break. There's more to come. Stay with us.
I woke up with one leg less than I used to have, and now I'm on fire. I twist and I scream until I dream again. I woke up with one leg, and it hurts like hell when everything's quiet. If I can get to sleep, I will feel no pain. I heard you say this way is...
All right, welcome back. We are at our news section, and Penny has an article for us.
Yep. I found an article from a few weeks ago, and the title is Yellow Jackets. Did Shauna really love Jeff from the start? Here's Melanie Linsky's take. And this is on Collider.com, and it's by Perry Nemiroff. And I'm just going to read the Melanie Linsky answers. She says, for me, I think that they were drawn to each other. That's something that Warren and I decided, that neither of them felt great about it, but it kept happening. They couldn't stop it, and they really were drawn to each other. I think she was sort of surprised, and she didn't really understand what it was. And then she says, and I think part of it, because she is a person who enjoys secrets and enjoys sneaking around a little bit, I think she thinks it's sexy. So I think part of it was the secrecy was kind of hot, and the fact that she was keeping it from her best friend, which is a terrible thing to do, I think there was something about it that was a bit thrilling, and it felt like she owned a little bit of power that Jackie didn't know she had. I think certainly when she got back from the wilderness, there was a conscious decision like, well, I did this awful thing to the person who was closest to me, and now I can't just say, oh, that was meaningless, and maybe I'll go off and... I think if that wilderness time had never happened, she would have been like, okay, well, bye, Jeff, that was fun. And gone on and had other love affairs and done other stuff. But I think she felt like, well, now I have to make this be meaningful. I have to make this be my relationship for my life. And was nervous to investigate it too closely like she is with everything. And that's the end of that. There's also a note here that's that great. Laura Lee was originally supposed to die in the pilot.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm glad we got her for longer than that.
Me too. I think she's a really interesting character. I hope we get, like, ghost Laura Lee in season 2.
Or backstory. I feel like there is still backstory that is important, because I think Laura Lee kind of helped this metamorphosis or evolution that we have seen in Lottie. And
definitely,
I feel like her background is important to the story.
Daphne, you want to give us our feedback?
Yes, we did get a message in. It is anonymous. No name was given, but this is what they had to say. I'm obsessed with the show, and your pod is a great discussion source. Might I recommend you guys revisiting Bart and Ashley's Dispatches from Elsewhere? It was a blueprint for using the viewer's desire to solve the mystery to disguise the obvious. Although in Dispatches from Elsewhere, they showed all the deception in the final episode, I hope that they leave us questioning in Yellow Jackets. As far as theories go, I have a few. I believe there is no cannibalism. I believe the hunted girls are actually a sacrifice to the forest for other food. The symbol looks to me like a fishhook, but instead of a worm, it's using a girl as bait. Also, I believe Lottie is Pit Girl. She could slip further into her unmedicated state and awake one morning to animal noises in her head and run from the cabin. The pit trap, already dug and waiting for other game, was just in her path. Once the other girls find her, they deduce that she must have sacrificed herself for them and bleed her out to bait in other game. Just some of my thoughts. Keep up the great work. Wow.
That's great feedback. Whoever you are, write in again.
Yes, thank you. That is the first time I've heard that theory, and I like it. I think it's interesting.
I have been suspicious that there's no cannibalism, that's a big red herring, but I hadn't really thought it through to the level of like sacrificing to the forest. It's a really interesting theory.
Yeah, it is.
I think this show is really good at showing you what you think you're seeing, but that's not really what you're seeing. Yes. And I have heard, and I think I talked about this last week, the theory that all of those scenes that we see in the first episode of the Cannibal Council are not what we think they are, that they might not be in the same timeline, they might not be connected to each other, but of course they look like they're all connected to each other. And I think that's really interesting, and I can't wait for a season.
I know. This has me energized. So yeah. Again, I don't know who sent this in. Thank you so much. Yes. I'd love to hear more. If you have any other thoughts or opinions, I would love to hear more of them, because this is very well thought out.
And next we have a voicemail from our friend Greg Schwamm, and I'm just going to play that.
Hey guys, this is Greg calling about episode 2 of Yellow Jackets. Alright, so just most of my focus is Misty. I feel like maybe she should have put the tourniquet on before cutting off Coach's leg. Maybe that's not the right way. I'm not 100% sure, but thought that was a little bit premature. I don't really understand how Shauna can immediately blame the person who she hit. That was a little bit silly. Misty is very calm with Natalie's gun in her face. I really liked the therapy session. Actually, the quote about marriage lives in the heart and dies in the crotch. I thought was good enough that I shared with my therapist, and she said she was going to steal it. Travis is a bit of a douche. Misty, she just wants to be a part of something. It's totally understandable, except for like the whole being a psychotic, crazy lunatic. She just wants to date. She just wants to be a part of a group. But no one really wants her to do it. And I don't blame her for manufacturing ways to be a part. Although maybe she takes a little bit too far. All right. Look forward to the podcast. Bye.
Just a smidge.
Just a little bit. She does tend to do things like tampering with cars, tampering with her own car so she can get a ride home from Stan. Like all of these little things. She does tend to go overboard, but I think it was you, Wendy, earlier who said that Misty wasn't really afraid of that gun. She was happy to see Natalie. Like, it was this wonderful thing.
Yeah. She wasn't scared at all.
I don't know if we've ever seen her scared.
Yeah.
Yeah, not yet.
All right. And our next call is from our friend Anwen, all the way from New Zealand, the paradise of the world.
Hey guys, this is Anwen. I was a little bit late to the Yellow Jackets party, but now I am fully on board. And it's really cool to be doing this rewatch. There's so many things that you notice that I didn't notice the first time, and they put so many clues in about the characters. One thing that I really noticed last week on the first episode was Jackie in the woods at the party when she was getting everybody to tell each other nice things about each other, and the contrast with her later when they're in the wilderness. At this party she's in control and she's bringing the group back together and she's a leader, and then later when she's in the woods it's just completely the opposite, and it's really incredible to see the difference. One of the other things that I noticed on this episode was all of the little bits that give you clues and that you can kind of relish when you go back and watch it later. So even something as small as Ty doing the shadow puppets with the wolf, and all you see is the shadow kind of changing slightly into a more realistic looking wolf shape, and then a little flash of a real wolf. And of course when you first see it you don't know what's happening, but later once you know, oh, it's really chilling. Another clue with the teammates all carrying Coach's body along, and Jackie is walking along behind them alone. I didn't pick that up the first time. This time it was really obvious. Around the fire when everyone's laughing at Laura Lee saying the bad word about her piano teacher, and Misty doesn't laugh, and she just looks around and she sort of looks at other people laughing and she goes, well, I don't get it, but I'm going to laugh to fit in. It was really another chilling moment as well, where you really get to understand what she's like. Anyway, keep up the great work. I'm following along with you guys and excited to rewatch every week again. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Anwen.
Thanks, Anwen.
I didn't notice that Jackie was walking behind everybody else, not helping to carry the body.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Yeah.
I love when feedback is like extra stuff that we didn't see. That's mm-hmm. great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because you know how sometimes you can watch something a bunch of times and you miss, there's something happening and you don't notice it, but someone coming in, you know, colder than you are is able to watch it and catch on. Mm-hmm. I love it. Our feedback this week was great. Keep it coming, guys.
Yeah, this is such fun, and it's going to be so sad when it's over and we have to wait till season two.
I know, but I'm glad we decided to do this rewatch because it's giving us a little bit of a bridge.
Yeah.
To keep talking about it.
Yeah.
I did get someone ask me if we were going to go back through episodes 6 through 10 the same way. And I'm like, well, we did cover them individually, but not in this way.
We're just going to keep doing it every week until season two. We'll just keep rewatching.
We're just going to keep talking. We're just going to keep talking about it.
That's basically what we did with Game of Thrones
until
the finale.
Yeah.
All right, that is our show. Thanks for listening, everyone.
If you want to write in or leave us a message, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, be sure to check out all of our other shows, especially right now. Jason and Lucy are covering the second third of the final season of Walking Dead, and it's been a great season. It's really been fun to watch and to listen to them.
It has, and I have access, and I know a lot of people are watching ahead. I'm really trying to just keep it week to week.
Really?
Yeah, it's really hard, but I want to go week to week with the podcast, so.
Yeah, I feel like that's better because you watch it and then you don't get the podcast for a week and 2 days, and that's a long time.
Yeah. And also, then weirdly, 3 days after that, Talking Dead comes out.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, right, Talking Dead. I forgot about that.
Right.
I'm really committed to the last third of the season, watching it week to week when it airs and not watching ahead.
I've been hearing people calling them trimesters, and I think that's hilarious.
That is funny.
Second trimester.
That's good. I'm gonna adopt that.
Yeah. And I'm excited, and it's hard to believe it's really coming to an end, although I know we have the movies coming as well, but
I'll believe the movies when I see it.
It's like Deadwood to me, honestly. It took 10 years for them to bring Deadwood back, and I don't want to wait 10 years.
They just rebooted Sex and the City, and I want to say that's been 10, maybe 15 years.
Yeah.
And it's definitely difficult because they don't have all the characters, but it's still like worth watching. It's really nice to like revisit those characters, you know, that you spent so much time with.
Yeah.
What do you have going on with Run for Your Lives, Daphne?
So we are at the end of season 3. So our episode 75 is our look back special, where we take a look at movies that we covered over this season. And it's a lot of fun going back and picking out what your favorites are.
75. Wow, that's amazing.
I know.
Congratulations.
Thanks. It's been a lot of fun. It started as this little pandemic project, and Paik and I just have so much fun talking about these movies. Sometimes the movies are ridiculous, and other times they're really deep and dark. But we try to break it down and enjoy it and bring things to light as we go through it. So, yeah, we'll be back. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back with season 4 April-ish. In April. In early April. That's
good.
We don't have a date yet, but probably early April. March is a busy month for a lot of us.
Yeah, it sure is. All right. next episode of this podcast, we will be covering Yellow Jackets Season 1, Episode 3, The Dollhouse.
Ooh, this is going to be good. Mm-hmm. I'm already looking forward to it.
Can't wait.
All right, that's our show.
Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Buzz, 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 buzz.